May I just make a few corrections? I'm not the Asian Vice President of the World Student Christian Federation as per advertisement. I'm only an executive member of the World Student Christian Federation. But the first part still holds true. I'm an Asian. And another thing, I have to apologize for the seemingly impropriety under which I am traveling, that is, traveling with a maiden name when I am definitely married. I come from a country where women do not take on the names of their husbands when they get married, and that is not an attempt to balk the authority that is enforced on you with marriage. It is just a concession by our men folk, I suppose, to the woman that theirs is the responsibility as well as their privilege of equality in the family. Before I speak on the topic this afternoon, may I just make a few qualifications. The topic has been announced, I understand, as the political situation in Southeast Asia. I do not claim to speak as a politician. As a woman, the only area where I ever practice politics is within the domestic circle. And I'm afraid I do not have the insight as an intellectual would have. What I shall try to tell you is the political situation in Southeast Asia as a Christian sees it, and that may be purely a one woman's opinion. I don't know how much that is beside one man's opinion. Another statement that I want to make before I go on is that I'm speaking about a constant change. So you will be better informed if you read the Herald Tribune or the New York Times or the Chicago Tribune or something on the latest development as fact. And I'm not able to tell you what happened yesterday because I haven't read the newspaper for today. But I'm just trying to tell you a few things which go to form the political situation which is happening today in Southeast Asia. First of all, our people do not have the same conception of history as you have under a Western Christian culture. Because, as you very well know, countries in Asia are not Christian countries. We have our age-old traditional religions and also cultures which spring from age-old religions like Hinduism, Mohammedanism, and also Buddhism. For example, I'm sure my Buddhist friends will agree that the concept of change, according to the Buddhist religion, is entirely different to the concept of change according to the Christian culture. I'm very much reminded of the lines by Cooper where he says, change is the food on which all things subsist, created changeable, and change at last destroys them. And that comes to be part of a concept of history. We do not have precise political institutions as part of our concept in history. And then what about our traditional regard to authority, governmental authority? It is one of glory and also of fear. Kings, according to our Burmese tradition, are regarded as one of the enemies, of which there are five, and they are more to be feared than to be loved. I'm not saying that all kings are cruel so that they have to be feared, but there is an equation of paternalism where the king at most is a kind father, a benevolent despot, an absolute monarch. However, that does not mean to say that there is no concept of democracy in our tradition. There is the concept of democracy, even with religion, even with culture, and even with the very structure of our social institutions. And then I wish you also to remember that the political situation in Southeast Asia today is pretty much the outcome of the period of imperialism that waved over Asia, or part of Asia, in the latter part of the 18th century and up till a few years ago. In that imperial period, again, governments are pretty paternal, making people either wholly dependent on authority or fully resenting it. It was also considered to be a period of economic exploitation and also of racial subjugation. Somewhere you must have come across Kipling's description of the white man's burden. I'm not saying that the imperial period is a very dark period for all our nations, because there is the cultural influence of the West that came in with the British or the Dutch or the French Empire. It also brought in scientific rationalism, education according to the Western culture and tradition, and with it, a new concept of man. So you see, controversies take place within same period. Here you have a race thinking of another race as a burden, subjugating it. On the other hand, the same race is giving a cultural concept, according to the Christian tradition, of the dignity of man. However, British culture, or rather Western culture, brought out the existing ingredients of democracy, the high individualism that is found in the Buddhist religion, and also the social responsibility that rests with each communal as well as community group. Social institutions like the family, the community, are preserved even when there is this infiltration of Western culture. And so, even during the imperial period, when authority is delegated to the people, and when it's still close to a family institution, as in the case of handling a municipality or a community project, then it is carried out very well. People understood authority on that level. People understand power on that level. People understand democracy at that level. But the unhappy part is the moral concepts that hold the family together, the moral and democratic concepts that help to build towns, communities, villages together, cannot be translated into governmental responsibility. And when I say government, I mean citizenship, where each person take on himself the governing of his or her own country. This summer, when I was in Europe, I was talking over with a girl from England, and then we were talking about moral concepts within the family and then moral concepts within a nation. She said she found this very striking. In Britain nowadays, things like divorces are accepted, the family is falling apart, and yet the British, when it comes to the government, when it comes to being a people, a nation, respond with the highest moral ideals. Whereas, on the other hand, in a country like France, the family is still definitely an institution. Divorce is not a thing that is done. And yet, when it comes to paying taxes, when it comes to working as a nation, to try to cheat the government as cleverly as you can, well, we are in the same position, where we are not able to translate this loyalty to the family, to a loyalty to the government. I'm not saying this of everybody in the whole of Southeast Asia, but I say this of the majority. And then the place of bribery and corruption. Once upon a time, when there were rulers, it was the custom to pay some kind of a tribute to anybody who is in authority. This later came to be translated into our modern governmental system. Sometimes it is only a tribute, sometimes it is demanded, sometimes it becomes a corruption. These things, however, are questioned by the general population today. And I'm just trying to bring out these little everyday things so that you will understand why there is a revolution in Southeast Asia today and how much morals play a part in that revolution. There is in Southeast Asia today a very intensive search for democracy. We are able to explain ourselves that we have gained a freedom from imperialism. But we ask ourselves today, what is this freedom for? After freedom from something, what is this freedom for? Are we fighting for ideologies like nationalism, like communism, or are we fighting for mere survival? Sometimes it is survival. Sometimes it is expressed in very rigid nationalism, which excludes every other race, people, or concept which we do not regard nationalistic. Sometimes it becomes so liberal and wide that it includes the whole world, even at the expense of your own people. These are the questions that go on in the mind of our people today. And then, something that has never existed before, or rather something that has not shown itself so vividly before, is existing there now, a thing called racialism. Do not think that you in America alone have that monopoly of racialism. We have it too. Sometimes it is our fault because we as a race of Burmans have lost most of our land and our money to the immigrant Indian and Chinese because we take too many things for granted. For example, the land belongs to us, it's very fertile, and therefore it would cooperate more with the Burman who belongs to the land than with the Indian, and then suddenly wake up to find out that it cooperates with anybody who works hard enough.